we're going to have to rebuild within this wild, wild west of information flow some sort of curating function.
It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve.
We've got to maybe do something with the internet.
Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Somebody will say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people.
Facebook rebrands Libra as Novi to take another kick at the cat. The Romanian criminal cartel that stole over $1 billion via ATM skimming. A class action lawsuit against Google over private browser tracking. And Amazon bans and then allows a book that challenges the coronavirus narrative. Hello, everyone. This is Mark Jeftovic here with another episode of Access of Easy. This is number 149. We're taping this on June the 9th. And let's get down to the quotes. Actually, let's tell you where the show notes are first. It will be on accessofeasy.com/149. And now we'll do the quotes. Last week's quote was, "Uncertainty is an uncomfortable position, but certainty is an absurd one." That was Voltaire, and the winner was Michael Ciercio. This week's quote is, "Emergencies have always been the pretext on which the safeguards of the individual have been eroded." So remember the rules. You can't search this up online, and the first person to post the correct source of the quote to the show notes page, which I just gave you, we'll get their next domain renewal or web hosting renewal on us. Facebook rebrands Libra as Novi to try again. So Facebook has been attempting to rebrand their failed Libra initiative as something called Novi, and so far it's flown under my radar, maybe everybody's. So when they came out last year, I wrote at length on why the idea of Facebook coming out with their own digital currency was a terrifying prospect to nation states in general, and why it was no surprise when governments moved quickly to shut them down. In Access of Easy number 117, we detailed how the U.S. Senate all but extorted the various constituents of the Libra Council to drop out or face investigations for their roles in distributing child pornography. Yes, really. And in case I'm sounding too sympathetic to Facebook, note that Charles and Jesse and I have spent multiple episodes of our Access of Easy salons analyzing how much it would suck if the successors to our currently failing institutions turn out to be the likes of Google and Facebook and Amazon. We're basically talking about two overwhelmingly huge and self-serving venal entities in nation states and big tech platforms, duking it out for hegemony over everybody else. So it was by pure fluke that I caught an article called "Facebook, Novi, and Surveillance Finance" by UK developer Stephen Deal. All other references in the news about Facebook's rebranding under the Novi label frame it as a benign brand overhaul of Facebook's proposed crypto wallet. Only this article continues on the theme of what the ramifications are for the rest of us under a regime of big tech autonomous digital currencies like Novi. Quote, "Facebook's latest attempt to infiltrate the financial services sector has seen the rebranding of their Libra cryptocurrency project into the new Facebook brand Novi. Last year, this release was widely criticized by both regulators and the technology industry. After the initial announcement and code drop last year, the Libra name has been dragged through the mud by the press due to the project's complete disdain for compliance, horrific privacy implications, and bizarre code architecture. However, nothing about this project has changed in any meaningful way, and its intentions are just as insidious as they were last year. Novi is an attempt to build a large global data mining project on consumer financial data. If the Facebook Novi project is allowed to launch, it has the potential to create conflicts of interest which rival the 2018 Cambridge Analytica scandal." End quote. So I frequently observe in our AOE salons and some of my writings, for a significant portion of the population, if they become used to using a digital currency built into something like Facebook, their Facebook login and account will become more significant and relevant in their day-to-day lives than their government-issued passports. So that's what we're looking at, I think, and that's what has nation states so tense about this. But amid the tension between the nation states and the big tech platforms, the Novi Initiative illustrates that there could emerge out of this a working simpatico between the two of them, which will be like a vice, which the privacy and the autonomy of individual citizens will be squeezed. Quote, while the United States struggles with social unrest and Zuckerberg cozies up to the Trump administration for favors, the Novi project is business as usual. The executives are right now trying to weasel through the requirements across the U.S. and Europe to put this new project into place. Regulators are being asked to allow Facebook to quietly construct a massive data mining apparatus on top of the American and European financial systems. This new move would allow Facebook directly into the most personal data of citizens, as has always been the business model of Facebook. User data will at best be sold off to Novi consortium members, monetized for advertisers, and at worst used for the same political purposes as we saw in 2018. End quote. It's a great article. I do encourage you to read the whole thing, forward to your colleagues and friends. And you might wonder, so what's the antidote if our failing institutions and ascendant big tech platforms are our enemies? What do you do about it? And as we say a lot in the Axis of Easy salons, you embrace decentralization as much as possible. You start working with real cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum and Litecoin, not the digital currency substitutes that people like Facebook are coming out with. And you get involved with the associated ecosystems of real distributed decentralized crypto. We're basically, the way I see it, we are in season two of Mr. Robot, and that's the season where we figure out that the entire plot is really about an epic struggle between the open source decentralized protocols like Bitcoin and closed proprietary systems like EvilCo's EvilCoin, as depicted in that show. The Romanian criminal cartel that stole over $1 billion via ATM skimming. This is a really fascinating 30-minute documentary put out by the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, OCCRP, and they look at a organized crime gang called Riviera Maya. They're a Romanian group, and they specialize in ATM bank machine skimmers operating mainly in the heavy tourist areas of Mexico. They were first outed by security writer Brian Krebs back in 2015. They're reputed to have stolen over $1.2 billion USD to date. They were so sophisticated, or are so sophisticated, that they even owned and operated their own ATM company called Instacash, which made it easier for them to deploy bank machines preloaded with card reading skimmers. Class action lawsuit against Google over private browser tracking. So a lot of us are kind of conditioned to believe that when we open up an incognito mode under Chrome or some other private browser tab, that we don't have to worry about being tracked anymore. But according to a class action lawsuit just filed in California, that may not be true. It's alleging that Google still tracks your movements through the company's sprawling ad network, and that network is used by over 70% of all online publishers. So whenever you hit a website running Google AdWords, which is, you know, the majority of sites that run ads, even within a private browsing tab, then, quote, the user's personal information, such as the user's IP address, what the user is viewing, what the user last viewed, and details about the user's hardware are sent to the company's servers in California, end quote. And the plaintiffs allege that this is being done without the website visitor's consent because Google doesn't require its ad network, its network of publishers, to disclose the capture of personal info to the visitor. The class action is open to anybody who owns an Android device or anybody who has a Google account who visited a website containing Google ads in private mode on. It seeks damages of $5,000 per user or three times actual damages, whichever is greater. Around the same time, the Arizona Attorney General filed a similar complaint against Google, and Google is also facing similar cases involving improper ad tracking in the UK and Australia. And let's remember that last September, Google paid a $170 million settlement to the US FTC over illegally collecting the data of children. Canadian telco spurn Huawei and go with alternatives for 5G. So this is a CBC article that tells us that the three major telecoms in Canada have decided not to use Huawei equipment to build out their 5G networks. Bell and Telus have decided to go with Ericsson, which is Swedish, and Nokia, which is Finnish, and Rogers already had a pre-existing deal with Ericsson. So these decisions come amid widespread suspicion that using Huawei to build the next generation IT backbone would come with some national security implications, because it is alleged or suspected that the Chinese government is using their own country's big tech players in foreign surveillance and intelligence gathering roles, and even theft of intellectual property. There's some deeper coverage of this. There's a book called Claws of the Panda, Beijing's Campaign of Influence and Intimidation in Canada by Jonathan Manthorpe. I've got it. I'm about halfway through it. And it details the Chinese Communist Party's operations, including those of Huawei within Canada. New service pinpoints your email before you submit any data. Another article by a dev named Heshi Brody. He was shocked to find that retargeting and shopping cart abandonment systems had kind of gone over the creepy line, as they say, when he was shopping for a breast pump for his wife. He found a site and he was completing an insurance form there to learn about his coverage options, but he hadn't submitted the form yet. And he took a break from the process because his wife wanted to research the breast pump. 10 minutes later, he got a shopping cart abandonment email from the website, and he's wondering, like, how did this even get here? Because I haven't even submitted the form. So he's a dev. He views the source of the page. He takes a look behind the curtain, and his article's a really good analysis of it. It turns out there's some embedded JavaScript in the page that is activated by an input change, and it stashes the email address in the form query string. And it all comes from a third-party tech called AdShoppers. That's the company, is called AdShoppers, and they have a system called Email Retargeting Co-op and Safe Opt Consumer Rights Management Integrated Platform. And so, as I understand it, the system goes beyond snagging your email on a session you don't complete or a form you don't submit. In their own words, they quote, "network many sites to a point where at least one knows who you are. Once identified, that website will share it with the rest of the network." End quote. Brody put his own analogy into his article. I think it's an apt one. Quote, "imagine if every store you visited would take a picture of you and then share and compare it with neighboring stores until they find one that you are a customer of and has your information. If such an agreement was in place, that store would now share who you are with the store that you are not yet a customer of and then add you to their marketing list. This is exactly what AdShoppers does." End quote. So Brody, of course, he says, "I'm not a lawyer. I can't say whether this is legal or not, but for me, sitting here with a bit of experience in the business, I can't possibly understand how doing this would be CASL compliant here in Canada. I'm not as sure about the prevailing law in the US, but I would bet that this is also offside of the European Union's GDPR. Amazon bars and then allows a book that challenges the coronavirus narrative. So we've been following this war on dissenting opinion over these newsletters for a long time, and we know that it's accelerated since the coronavirus pandemic began. And leading the charge against non-conforming speech are the tech platforms and the mainstream media. So the former deplatforms you, while the latter just marginalizes and stigmatizes you. The latest salvo was fired, or attempted to be fired, by Amazon's Kindle Direct Publishing unit. They refused to publish a book by Alex Berenson called Unreported Truths About COVID-19 and the Lockdowns, Part 1, Introduction and Death Counts and Estimates. Berenson's a former New York Times reporter and an author of numerous fiction and nonfiction books, and his first installment looks at the official narratives around the COVID-19 fatality rates and the estimates. Amazon notified him that they would not be carrying the book after he uploaded it to the KDP platform. They said that in matters related to the coronavirus, the company would be referring customers to official sources for any information about the virus. So an uproar erupted across social media. I think even Elon Musk jumped into the fray and carped on Amazon a bit, and they finally reversed their position, and they're now carrying the book. I read it over the weekend. It's a very quick read, and I find it's well documented, it's verifiable data, it's traceable sources, and it contains nothing particularly controversial other than that the government's quite possibly overreacted based on really flawed computer models. And we wrote an article about the flawed computer models a few weeks ago. Anyhow, I wrote a longer piece about this over on the Access of Easy website. It's in the show notes page. You can check it out there. The inevitable narrative wars around George Floyd are no accident. So I don't want to risk wading into a minefield here, but it's not my intent. But I did think that this article I saw over on Epsilon Theory, where I'm a subscriber, did a cogent and heartfelt job of analyzing the conflicting narratives around the incident and the ensuing unrest. Quote, as you learned more about George's death at the hands of a Minneapolis police officer, maybe you felt and thought a lot of different things at once. About the rule of law. About police and whose interests they serve and protect. About racism and where it still exists. About righteous protest and civil disobedience. About the moral obligations that go along with that disobedience. And then maybe you felt like you were being told that you couldn't feel all those things, that they were somehow in conflict with one another. Maybe you felt like you were being offered a set of two diametrically opposed and arbitrarily limited perspectives that didn't allow for the depths of everything you felt. Maybe you felt channeled into one of two archetypes which just so happened to align with the messaging of the two major political parties. End quote. So the article takes the reader through Epsilon Theory's methodology around measuring and collating narratives as they emerge and evolve. And I think their approach is kind of startling and revolutionary, to be frank about it. And then they end up where most of their articles end up, and where anybody reading these newsletters ends up a lot of the time, and where Charles and Jesse and I frequently end up on our salons. We come to a conclusion that our institutions are no longer capable of truly serving their constituencies. And more often, too often, and perhaps unconsciously, they can only serve their own interests, twisting everything that happens into a binary, near cartoonish trope that either vindicates their own dogma or demonizes the opposing camp. So I would check that out. Brings us to Access of Easy, salon number 7, Never Mind the Influencers, Here Come the Revolts. What a difference a week makes, because in the previous salon, number 6, we were shouting at clouds about the loss of institutional legitimacy again. And as we taped number 7, we found ourselves in what looked like the early innings of a revolt. As the coronavirus was the catalyst and not the cause of the current economic crisis, the protests around George Floyd was not the cause but the catalyst of widespread unrest among the populace. As Jesse quipped at the beginning of the previous week's episode, people are pissed. Yes, they are. So we go through all that. It's a pretty interesting conversation, and who knows where we're going to wind up this Thursday by the time Thursday gets here for this coming week's salon. But that's it for this week. I hope everyone stays. What's the order? I might have to switch up the order I say this. I usually say stay safe, stay sane, but I think I'm going to switch it to stay sane, stay safe, and stay healthy. Okay. Show notes for this week, accessofeasy.com/149. Thanks. Have a great day. You're going?
diet, exercise, just using entrepreneur. You gotta keep those women working, but you looking good, I swear, that's Bangladesh. Rhymes with your fresh. They just got home.